I want you to close your eyes for a second. Well, unless you're driving, obviously. But try to picture this really specific scene. Imagine a fragile wooden bridge in Whittier, California.
Just a totally normal structure, right?
Right. But it is a September afternoon, and you are caught in this absolute, just torrential rain. And up top, on this wooden structure, there is someone calmly walking a tiny dog. And the vibe up there is, it's peaceful. It feels almost surreal in its quietness, considering the weather.
Yeah, but then you look down.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just feet below them, there is a violent, raging brown river roaring through the landscape. And it looks like it could just, wash the entire structure and everything on it completely away.
It's the contrast there is just incredibly striking. You have the absolute brutality of nature churning underneath, and it's juxtaposed with the extreme fragility of this very ordinary daily routine happening just inches above it.
Yeah.
You get this intense sense that the world could literally end at any moment, but the dog still needs to be walked.
Right, exactly. But this scene isn't a photograph or a movie. It's actually a watercolor painting called Seis Paseo con Marley, which translates to Six, Walk with Marley.
Such a beautiful piece.
It really is. It's part of this broader series called Momentos y Oficios by the artist Jero Duque. And well, the reason we are doing this deep dive today is because we were looking through this brilliant analysis on artcolorado.com, and what really caught our attention wasn't just the final painting itself.
Right, it was the extra materials.
Exactly. The author of that piece included Duke's own private journal entries and his technical notes right alongside the artwork, and it completely changes how you look at the whole thing.
Which is such a rare treat, honestly, for anyone trying to understand art. I mean, usually we aren't just looking at the finished canvas hanging on a wall,
Yeah, it's very sanitized usually.
Completely. But here we are getting the emotional and technical scaffolding that actually built it. Seeing the artist's internal monologue, it reveals so much about how intense emotional states can completely rewire how we view our most mundane, everyday habits.
So I think we should start with the literal physical foundation the artist chose to hold that memory. Because Duke was, obsessively specific about his materials in his notes.
He really was.
He details the exact dimensions, 15 by 11 inches. He specifies that he used Daniel Smith brand paint. And crucially, he points out that he painted on 300-gram cold-press watercolor paper.
Which, to a lot of people listening, that might just sound like a standard trip to the art supply store. Like, sure, paper and paint.
Right, exactly. But cold press paper is actually fascinating when you really look at it. If you put it under a microscope, it is not smooth at all. It is full of these tiny, rugged mountains and valleys of cellulose.
The texture is just highly erratic. And what's brilliant is that Duke harnesses that physical unpredictability to mirror how memory itself actually works.
Oh, that's such a good point.
Right, because when you look back at a deeply emotional event, some details, like, say, the smell of a wet asphalt or the exact color of a rain jacket, they get permanently stuck in those deep crevices with painful, vivid clarity. But then whole other parts of the memory, like entire sequences of time, they just wash over the smooth parts and disappear entirely.
Oh, I love that analogy. It's like he's actually leaning into the instability of the medium itself to capture that feeling. The analysis notes he uses a technique called aguadas, which is working wet on wet.
Right, where you soak the patch first.
Yeah, so he wets the paper first and then drops in these highly diluted layers of browns and ochres
Yeah.
to create that raging river.
And the thing with wet on wet is the brush doesn't dictate the final form there. The water does.
Right.
When that pigment hits the soaked paper, it just explodes and branches out entirely on its own. And he specifically chose those Daniel Smith paints for a property called granulation.
Okay, let me guess how that works, based on the whole paper texture thing we were just talking
Go
about.
for it.
So if granulation means the paint has heavy mineral particles in it, and you mix them with a ton of water, gravity must literally pull those heavy minerals down into those microscopic valleys of the paper. Like they separate from the water and just sink.
You got it perfectly. That process creates this gritty, almost dirt-like texture on the page. So Duke is using the actual physics of the material, literally gravity and heavy minerals, to build the dense, heavy atmosphere of a California storm and a muddy river.
That's wild.
He's letting the physical environment of the painting be as chaotic and uncontrollable as the environment of the memory itself.
Which, okay, that actually brings up something in his notes that completely threw me when I was reading it. Duke openly criticized his own technique in this piece.
Yeah, the journal entries are very raw.
He wrote that he should have refined the depth and the contrast more. And he actually felt he didn't properly highlight the human figure against all that chaotic water. And I'm just sitting there wondering, why would a highly skilled artist voluntarily point out his own mistakes to the public?
It seems counterintuitive, right?
Totally. My first instinct is that highlighting your flaws just undermines the masterpiece you literally just spent hours creating.
Well, typically, the art world presents us with this impenetrable, perfect final product. The artist intentionally hides the messy process, but by pointing out his own structural flaws in his journal, Duke breaks the glass between the creator and the observer.
Oh, interesting.
He is actively declaring his true priorities to you, the viewer. He's saying, I chose to stop refining.
So he prioritized the spontaneity over the perfection.
Exactly. He favored the sincerity of that untamed watercolor river over rigid academic standards. Mm. And it shifts the painting from feeling like the sterile object in a gallery to feeling like a torn page you just found in a very intimate diary.
I see what you mean.
The vulnerability of his technique directly mirrors the vulnerability of the memory he's trying to preserve.
Man, that makes me look at the actual subjects of the painting completely differently now. Because the figures on the bridge, which are his partner, Ruby, and their 16-year-old chihuahua, Marley, they are the ones defying this massive river.
Hmm. Right. They're at the center of it all.
But if you zoom in on them in the painting, they are tiny. They're blurry. They lack almost all identifying detail. It's essentially just a quick gesture of a person and a tiny brown dot of a dog.
Just shapes, basically.
Yeah. And if you love an animal that deeply and you know she's 16 years old mm-hmm. and you are inevitably going to lose her, my instinct would be to paint every single hair. Like, I'd want a 4K photographic capture of her exact silhouette before she was gone.
I think we all constantly crave that high-definition capture. I mean, we take 1,000 photos on our phones trying to freeze time, but that raises a really profound question about what memory actually is.
Okay, no, so?
Well, what you're describing is hyperrealism. And hyperrealism gives you fantastic optical data. It tells you exactly how many stitches were in the dog's leash, but it lacks what we can call emotional temperature.
Emotional temperature. Okay, yeah. Is that like, think about your childhood bedroom. I couldn't tell you the exact square footage or like the specific thread count of the Catons I had, but I remember exactly how heavy the air felt in the summer or how safe it felt when a thunderstorm rolled in. Is it like that?
That's the perfect way to look at it. You remember the atmosphere and the weight of the space.
Right.
By leaving Ruby and Marley abstracted and blurry, Duke pulls this psychological trick on the viewer. He forces your brain to step in and do the work. Because he refuses to give you the granular photographic details of his dog, your brain actually has to fill in those blank spaces with your own nostalgia, your own specific experiences of love and loss.
Oh, wow. So he's not freezing the optical reality at all.
Not even a little bit.
The painting freezes the heavy, humid reality of how it actually felt to stand on that specific bridge in that specific mm-hmm. rain with that specific fear.
Exactly. The artwork transcends documentation and becomes this emotional conduit for anyone looking at it.
And that fear is so palpable in the painting, and it's driven entirely by that terrifying brown river underneath them. The weather pressure in this piece isn't just about, you know, barometric pressure.
No, not at all.
The author of the analysis points out that the massive contrast between this calm little dog walk and the terrifying water below represents a much deeper psychological state.
And Duke is completely explicit about this in his notes. The raging brown water isn't just storm runoff. It represents relentless time.
Yeah.
It is the visual embodiment of inevitable loss just rushing beneath their feet. And Marley, that tiny, blurry little dot on the wooden planks, is the true symbolic heart of the entire piece.
Because she's 16.
Right. Duke's notes reveal that he and his family were living in a state of what psychologists actually call anticipatory grief. They knew her time was coming to an end.
That's so heavy.
It is. Every single day, they lived with this constant ambient hum of fear that she would be departing soon.
And anticipatory grief completely changes how you view a simple structure like a bridge. I mean, think about what a bridge actually is in the real world.
Okay.
A bridge doesn't dam a river. It doesn't stop the water from flowing. Its only function is to give you a platform so you can tightrope walk over the chaos without sinking into it.
Just a temporary path.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And our daily routines are the exact same thing. You get up, you make the coffee, you walk the dog, you check the mail. These habits are just the temporary wooden planks we lay down over the roaring river of time.
And they give us a completely false sense of permanence, don't they?
Oh, 100%.
We tell ourselves, you know, I walk the dog today, so of course I will walk the dog tomorrow. But the river is always right there, just inches below the planks. And anticipatory grief acts as a magnifying glass for the artist here. Normally, taking the dog out in the freezing rain is a chore.
Yeah, it's tedious.
Yeah.
You put your head down and just want it to be over so you can go back inside.
Right. But when you're hyper aware that the routine is going to end, you stop sleepwalking through it. Knowing the time is limited transforms that exact same tedious chore into an act of deep, profound devotion.
That's beautiful.
Sustained, hyper-focused attention, like absorbing the humidity, the exact shade of the wet leaves, the specific frail way an old dog walks that level of attention, is framed here as the highest, purest form of love. He isn't rushing through the routine. He is anchoring his soul in every single second of it.
And because of that intense magnifying glass attention, this mundane daily habit, a 15-minute walk in bad weather, it attends to something permanent.
It really does.
In the source material, Duke introduces a concept that I just find completely mind-bending. He calls it patrimonio effectivo, which translates to effective heritage.
It's such a gorgeous phrase, and it demands a massive philosophical shift in how we view our lives.
Tell me about it.
Well, we usually associate the word heritage or patrimony with things you inherit that have tangible financial value, right?
Like you inherit a house, you inherit family jewelry or a stock portfolio.
Exactly. But Duke claims a rainy 15-minute dog walk as his wealth. He is saying this tiny fleeting routine is a valuable asset that he is taking with him.
And he builds on that wealth with another phrase from his notes that really needs some cultural context to fully appreciate, I think. He uses the term trastio espiritual.
Yes.
In English, that translates roughly to spiritual moving. But the analysis points out that in Colombia, where the artist is from, a trastio isn't just a generic relocation to a new city.
No, it's much more intense than that.
It's the physical, exhausting act of moving out of a house. It implies packing up all your belongings, making really hard decisions about what is too valuable to leave behind, and loading it onto a truck to take to your new life.
You're curating what matters most.
Right.
And by observing Marley with such intense, desperate focus during these daily routines, the artist was literally executing a spiritual trastio.
Oh.
He was packing Marley's soul into his own memory. He was doing the heavy lifting to ensure that when her physical body inevitably gave out, when she could no longer walk across that wooden bridge, her essence would already be moved in.
Wow.
She would spiritually relocate to live permanently inside the memories of those who loved her.
He packed her up so she wouldn't be left behind in the past.
Precisely.
You know, the author of the analysis over at artcoloragua.com brings up a beautiful, heartbreaking point that really grounds all this high-level art theory into something deeply human.
The personal anecdotes, yeah.
Yeah. The author wrote about their own childhood dog passing away. And they mentioned that the day at the vet was dramatic and awful, as you'd expect. But the true devastation wasn't the big cinematic goodbye.
It never is.
The hardest part was waking up at 7 a.m. the next morning. Their brain was still locked on the routine. The author swung their legs out of bed, and the crushing realization was that the familiar click-clack, the dog's little nails on the hardwood floor, was just gone forever.
Yeah, that really hits you.
The silence of the broken routine was 1,000 times louder than the crying at the vet.
It really is. And the author also shared a similar experience with a cat they lived with for 15 years.
Oh, right. The coffee story.
Yeah. Their morning routine was synchronized. The author would stagger into the kitchen to make coffee, and the cat would weave around their ankles demanding breakfast. But when the cat passed, making that morning coffee without preparing her food first left a palpable, dense void in the room. The kitchen suddenly felt entirely different.
The whole house suddenly feels immense and empty.
Because we mistakenly think that our loved ones inhabit the physical rooms of our houses, we think they live in the living room or the kitchen, but they don't.
Where do they live then?
The true physical and temporal space where souls actually inhabit is within those shared routines.
Wow.
The space is the coffee ritual. The space is the rainy dog walk. When the routine breaks, the architecture of your daily life just collapses. We only recognize the routine as an act of pure foundational love when it is violently taken away from us.
The tragedy is that we only see the planks of the wooden bridge when they finally collapse into the river.
It is tragic, absolutely. But it is also deeply biological.
Yeah.
If we synthesize everything we've looked at today, there is a core evolutionary reason we do this. Human biology actually requires us to normalize our environment.
Like, we have to take stability for granted just to function.
Exactly.
We adapt to the miracle so we can get to work on time. Because if you woke up every single morning acutely aware that the river of time was rushing beneath you and that you could lose everyone you love at any given second, you would live in a state of constant paralyzing panic.
Your brain turns down the volume on the extraordinary just so you can survive the day. But here is the brilliance of Duke's work. This painting acts as a constructive short circuit to that daily biological amnesia.
Well, constructive short circuit. I like that.
He refused to wait for total absence to value the routine. He didn't wait for Marley to be gone to realize the walk was precious. He used watercolor. He used that erratic 300-gram paper to rebel against time. He forced the short circuit so he could see the wealth he had, freezing love in place while it was still breathing and walking right in front of him.
I think that is the ultimate takeaway for you listening to this right now. You don't need to have the skills of a master watercolor painter to do this.
Definitely not.
You don't need Daniel Smith pigments or intimate knowledge of wet-on-wet techniques to elevate your own simple moments into your own effective heritage. Mm-hmm. All you actually need is mindful attention.
Being present.
Exactly. It's about consciously feeling the weather on your skin, intentionally sharing the quiet silence of a living room, and just being fully present as you cross the temporary wooden bridge of daily life with the people and the pets that you love. It's about recognizing the wooden planks under your feet before the river rises.
Which leaves us with a fascinating and perhaps slightly haunting final thought to consider as you go about your day.
What's that?
If a single painting, born from one artist's intense attention, can rescue a 15-minute walk from absolute oblivion, what happens to the millions of unrecorded, unpainted daily walks we take with our loved ones? Mm. Are all those mundane moments simply washed away by the muddy river of time? Or do their silent, daily repetitions permanently alter the unseen landscape of our souls, ensuring that no matter how many years pass, we are never truly crossing a bridge alone?